famous French novelist. He writes wonderful novel, and he wanted to make something more cynical, so he took those two society, bears and mice, that hate each other. In the books, bears and mice live with each other, so it's perfect, but he wanted to explain how a bear and a mice can live. Because bears, of course, they eat mice, and mice, they just hate bears because they eat mice, so they don't like each other, but it's only prejudice and stuff like that, and it's how Ernest and Celestine just don't care about all those prejudices and start to live together because they just love creating, drawing and making music together. So it's what he wanted to make in the film.
Now, one thing that happens in the film is that the mice have the job of collecting teeth, sort of like tooth fairies in more anglophonic cultures. Yeah. Is that an actual tradition in French society, the tooth mice?
Yeah. Well, we don't have a tooth fairy, we have a tooth mice. It's when we lose a tooth, we have to put it under our pillow, and the next morning we have a coin instead of a tooth. But to be honest, when I was a kid, they told me that, but once I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw a huge hand, very hairy hand, putting a coin instead of my... So I had doubts. I thought it was bears or something, but actually it was my father's hand. He's very hairy. But in France, the tradition is that it's mice coming with the tooth.
Oh, and there's a scene in the film in which it's a very ironic moment because the bear parents are telling their cub about the tooth mouse and how wonderful it is. And when the real mouse, Celestine, shows up, she scares the tar out of him.
Yeah, there's something like this logical of a very... There's this guy who is a very wealthy sailor, and he wants to make money out of everything. So he has this thing where he doesn't want to his son to eat candies because he's going to lose his tooth, but he sells candies to every children, so he hopes they will lose their tooth. So her wife is going to sell them beautiful tooth that can replace the dirty teeth. So that's quite... capitalist
symbol. Right, across the street from dad's candy shop is mom's dentistry shop.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So you can just make a circle.
Now, for years and years, Gabrielle Vincent, she did not want anybody to make a film of the Ernest and Celestine books. What were some of her concerns?
Yeah, at the time, in the 80s, she didn't really like animation. She was really scared that we would took... her book and make it into very round shaped characters and make different models and stuff like that. So she didn't want it, and she thought that we would have made it for money, which was really not the case, because the producer of the film, Didier Brunner, he wanted to make this film for so long, but he wanted to take the drawings and put them into animation. He wanted to make them move and exactly as they were, because he loved those drawings, and these are so beautiful drawings, we wanted to make them move. So yeah, it was her main concern about the film.
Now, Didier Brunner, the producer of this film, Ernest and Celestine, he's produced a number of films, animated films, that are well known to American audiences. Mm-hmm. Among them, the Secret of Kells is one. The Triplets of Belleville, the really great Sylvain Chomet movie. Yeah. And another film that your co-directors were responsible for, Stéphane Aubier and Vincent Pittard.
Yeah. Well, actually, he didn't produce this one, but my co-director, they worked on a film called A Town Called Panic. And it's a very special movie. It's very different from Ernest and Celestine, but it's a really funny stop-motion movie with a cowboy living with an Indian and a horse, and they just live together in the countryside and having the weirdest adventure ever.
I've seen A Town Called Panic, and it works on a couple of different levels. It works, for kids. Yeah. It's like a romp with a whole bunch of little plastic toys that they might have around, an Indian, a cowboy, a horse, as you said. And on an adult level, it's completely absurdist. Yeah. It's like something that André Breton or somebody would have come up with. But it's, what strikes me about A Town Called Panic is that it goes along with that idea of great art concealing the artistry. It looks from the surface as if these are just plastic toys that have been manipulated around to make a movie. But in fact, they worked very hard at making different versions, probably hundreds of different versions of these characters, just to make this silly-looking film.
I saw a glimpse of how they worked. It was quite fascinating just to see how they just took those. They were just looking for any kind of toys they could find, and if they were funny, they just put it in the film and starting to, change them and just adding them new position and stuff. So it was really interesting, seeing them work on this film. Unfortunately, I couldn't work on this one, but I wish one day I'll be able to help them on one of their own film, because it seems to be so funny working with them.
Well, one of the things about animation that's true is that if somebody works really hard and does an amazing job, it looks effortless.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's what we try to do in Ernest and Celestine, to have this really effortless animation and drawings and stuff like that, so that anyone looking at the film should feel the same, like he can take a piece of paper and just start to draw and think it's possible to draw Ernest and Celestine like just by taking watercolor and ink and paper, and it works.
Right. In the original books, the author, Gabriel Vincent, was a master, a mistress of watercolor. And that's not so easy in this day and age to reproduce on film. You actually had a number of steps to go through to make the drawings look like watercolor.
Yeah, actually, it was. I think it's easier now to make a watercolor-looking film in animation, because we have the techniques and technology with us that helps us a lot. So we used computer to do the animation, so it could feel really rough and sketchy. And because on computer you just draw and you can immediately see what's going on, if the animation is right or wrong. So in that way, you can you're not scared of redoing things, correcting things. You just do things, and if it's not wrong, it's not a problem. You just do it again. But for the backgrounds of the film, we used real watercolor to have all those accidents as well, and we combined the two. And so that's how we tried to have this watercolor feeling in the film and this sketchy feeling as well.
Right, in the line work, you have very sketchy lines. You know, they're almost perforated, and they just suggest the shapes. Whereas the typical animation film, it has a lot of very closed shapes, very slick shapes. It's not so sketchy.
Yeah, that was quite complicated to have this. For me, it was very, not obvious, but spontaneous to work like this with those open shades. And as you said, like, it was more about suggesting things than really drawing things. And we had to make a very long casting to find the right animators to do this kind of drawing, because animators are more used to do very clean animation, like with the lines perfect and very clean. And here we were asking the opposite, like it was sketchy and just suggesting, and you stop drawing when we understand your drawing. You don't have to make it very clear and very detailed. We just need to see the emotion of a character, and that's all. And you don't have to precise everything. Like, if he has a button here, it's no problem if you forget to draw it, as long as we understand what's happening.
You're listening to Words and Pictures on KABU. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and we are in the studio with Benjamin Renner, the co-director, along with Stéphane Aubier and Vincent Patard, of the feature film Ernest and Celestine. So I heard that Ernest and Celestine recently won a César, the French equivalent of the Oscars, the Academy Awards.
Well, yes, I was kind of surprised receiving this prize, but it was because for animation, just going into this kind of ceremony for animation people, it's not really our thing, because we are very shy and we don't really want to be in the spotlight. So it was a good news for me, but also one of the worst news of my life, because when I received the prize, I had to go on stage and I was so scared that I couldn't say a word, and it was kind of shameful. But it was a good memory after all, in the end.
Yeah, you are one of the shyest people we've had in the studio. So, but that's typical of many animators.
Yeah, that's our problem, I guess. We are shy in real life, but in our drawings, we are really not shy, I guess.
No, very bold.
Yeah, suddenly we're like, yeah, we go ahead, let's go.
So you were really one of the younger people working on this film. You became a director of a feature film just out of school. Yeah. There was something that the producer, Didier Brunner, saw in your student work that he was impressed with.
Well, before I met him, I made a short film called A Mouse's Tale. And so I guess he saw a mouse and thought, but yeah, maybe he could suit for a film. And we met and I started working on the film. I discovered all the books when we met. And I loved the film so much that I started doing some animation. And he asked me if I wanted to do animation on the film. And I was like, yeah, it's perfect. I want to work on this film. But the thing is, I was not the director. I was just supposed to work on the film as an animator. But 1 year later, he couldn't find a director. So that's how I met, because I told Didier I can't direct the film by myself, because he told me, yeah, do you want to do it? And I say, I can't do it by myself. And that's how I met Vincent Patard and Stéphane Aubier. So we could be three directors and working together on this film.
And it turned out that because you had kind of a small crew, It became very collaborative.
Yeah, we were really, really enthusiastic at the idea of making this film. I mean, the fact that the books were so beautiful, that the animation was quite different from what we were used to do. And this kind of animation is like rough animation, because in animation it's really long, you have to make rough animation, and after you have to assist it, and after you have to clean it, and it's really, really long. And here it was like we just had to do the rough animation, which is one of the most pleasant thing to do in animation. So everyone was like, yeah, it's great, and it looks really beautiful, and watercolor is so great. And the story is great. So everyone was really thrilled working on this film. And yeah, it was quite a huge experience, because all the team was really young and we were really thinking like it was our own film. The animators, we didn't want them to just work, for example, on one character, on some scenes like here and here and here. We wanted them to do the complete animation. That means that they had to start with a storyboard, with a rough drawings of Ernest and Celestine, just depicting the action. And they had to do everything until the animation was cleaned. So that means the animation was complete in black and white. And they had to work on a whole sequence of the film, not like a scene here and a scene there and a scene here. So yeah, they really felt responsible of a whole chunk of the film, like not here and here and here. Just like when they were watching the movie, suddenly it was their sequence and they were like, oh my god, it's my turn. Oh. So it was quite funny to see their reaction, and they were really happy when the audience was laughing on the whole sequence that they just made. And we had to find the right sequence for the right person. For example, there was a guy, he couldn't work on sensitive scenes. He was more like an action guy, and we gave him the chase scene in the film. Like, he was really perfect for this scene. And there was a girl, she was really perfect for drawing Celestine and Ernest when they had more like when they're really intimate together. And it was really interesting working this way, because we were just talking to them, what do you like, what do you don't like, and stuff like that, and what's the best for you, and how it could work the best way.
I remember in Sylvain Chomet's feature film, The Triplets of Belleville, Chomet is famously a Jacques Tati fan. There's a lot of physicality in the work that he does, just amazing focus on the body and different physiques. Mm-hmm. And I see that as well in Ernest and Celestine. Mm. There's a great deal of slapstick, real focus on physical gags, on the lumbering nature of the bear, and the much more lithe movements of the mouse, you know, and the way they play off each other.
Yeah. Well, that's something I really love, just the acting of the characters, and I'm a big fan of Buster Keaton film and Harvey Lloyd and Charlie Chaplin, all those things. I really love that, and for me, it's It's quite amazing when you watch a Buster Keaton film. It's so efficient, even today. I mean, I watch it and I really love those kind of films. So I love this kind of comedy. And for example, right now I'm working on a graphic novel and it's supposed to be funny, but when I tell the dialogue just to my friend, just when I write it and I make them read, they don't laugh at all. They are just, yeah, it's not really funny. And but after, when I start to draw the characters and they say, oh, okay, I didn't see it this way, it's really funny this way. And I really need to have the acting is so important for me, like just the way they are telling things, just the way the character looks when he's saying something can be just, you know, his pose or the way he's holding something, everything is so important, so the comedy can appear suddenly. So I really love this. Working with an actor, it's so important for me. For Ernest and Celestine, it was kind of strange because we had a script. For me, I mean, it was the first time I was working with a script where I had to there was dialogue. So I had to find all this gesture thing on the film. And the good thing is that the screenplay writer, Daniel Pennac, he was really cool about the fact that we could do anything we wanted. Like we could add scene, like slapstick scene and stuff like that. He was really into this humor, but he couldn't write it down. So he told us, go ahead, just go ahead. If you have any idea, just go ahead. And I love this kind of humor. And I know you can't really write them, but it's like you write them by drawing, so go ahead and it will be perfect.
Right, so much is told through gesture and expression and action.
Yeah, yeah. But actually, me, for example, me, I'm the worst writer ever, but I can write only by drawing. And if I have to tell a story, I have to draw it. I can't write it. So that's quite interesting that you don't need to know how to write if you want to tell a story. That's quite an interesting thing to know.
It seemed to me that there might have been a bit of social commentary worked into Ernest and Celestine. Certainly a bit of mistrust towards authority figures.
Yeah, that's something Daniel Pennac has in his mind. I don't want to be called like an anarchist or something like this, but he's really into this. He doesn't like authority and stuff like that. But he's against that, but he likes to have fun with his characters. So he put policemen in the film and they have kind of a lot of trouble. The policemen, like Ernest and Celestine, are always running away from them. But he always speaks about it with a lot of humor and comedy. So,
Well, one of the challenges that you came up against, you and the whole crew, was certainly the budgets for feature films in France are much lower than you would see in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Well, that certainly placed a burden on other French filmmakers. We've mentioned before Sylvain Chomet. For his second feature, he went to Scotland. He was having trouble raising money in France. And he says now he won't do any hand-drawn features anymore because they're just so expensive. So it seems like there's a lot of creativity necessary to get a traditionally looking animated film to be made in France.
Well, to me, the way you have to work on an animation film in France is, for example, there's a scene in Ernest and Celestine where it was written that they escape the police and there's 1,000 mice running after Ernest and Celestine. And the producer told us, okay, we have to get rid of this scene because we don't have the money. And I just told him, yeah, we can find a way, you know, we can find a way to have something that will look good, but it won't be expensive, it won't cost much. And we created this sort of mass of mice, so it's one character, but it's composed of 1,000 mice just running after Ernest and Celestine.
It's almost like a wave.
Yeah, it's like a wave of mice coming after them, so it was much cheaper and it was really, it's much more impressive because it's symbolic. And that's what I like with hand-drawn animation, is that you can draw anything, you can imagine anything, and you can always find a way to tell something. So you just have to really think how you can do that. So.
Has this been a big enough hit, the Ernest and Celestine movie, that there might be, who knows, there might be a sequel?
Well, we don't want to make a sequel of Ernest and Celestine simply because we really think that the book exists, and to us the film is like an introduction to the books, and it must stay like this. Like, you know, nowadays when you ask a child who wrote the Jungle books, they all answer Walt Disney. And here we want people to remember that Ernest and Celestine is from Gabriel Vincent, and it's not an animation film, it's books. And the film is really like just an introduction to the books. It's nothing more. So if we start making a sequel, it might become more and more popular, and the idea of Ernest Celestine might be more focused on the film. So we don't want to make a sequel, but we definitely want to work the team that made Ernest and Celestine. We want to do another feature together. So we are starting to write one, and hopefully maybe in the next year we'll be able to start the production of it.
I suppose you've probably had some offers from Hollywood, but it sounds like you're dedicated to staying and helping the French film industry.
Well, the thing is, I have so much friends there. And there was this thing where I met this wonderful producer, Didier Brunner, who is really focused. He wants the director and the artistic team to give its best, and he gives us the opportunity and the condition to make artistic things. And so as I have that, I don't need anything else. I mean, I have the perfect condition to work, so I don't really want to leave France yet. But to me, it's more based on of a project. If someone one day just suggest me to work on a project that I love, I will go in Poland, in Iceland, anywhere in Greenland, if necessary, in United States, wherever. If the project suits me, I will go. And that's more about it than where to make it.
So what can you tell us about the graphic novel that you've got planned?
Yeah, well, it's after spending 5 years on Ernest and Celestine, I thought to myself, for my next project, I wanted to be much faster in this project. So it's a very short story about it's a fox, and he's really weak because he never ate meat, because each time he tries to eat a chicken, the chicken just beats him and he can't do anything. So he has this weirdest idea that he's going to steal eggs and wait for them to the little chicken just are born, and he's going to raise them and make them big, and so he can eat them one day, just pretending to be very mean. And so it's quite different from Ernest and Celestine, but it's really funny to just be able to do this story in 3-4 months.
Well, I hope you've been enjoying touring the US, and
yeah.
I hope that you'll come back again when the film is out in the spring.
I hope so as well.
Well, Benjamin Renner, it's been a pleasure having you on Words and Pictures. Thank you for stopping into the KBOO studios on your trip through the U.S.
Thank you very much.
And best of luck on the success of Ernest and Celestine.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
I'm your host, SW Conser. Thanks to all our listeners today at 90.7 FM and on the web. A version of this interview will be available later at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And please follow us on Twitter at wordsandpicture. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
It's time for the KBOO News at noon for Thursday, March 13th. I'm Kristen Yount. The environmental group Willamette River Keepers will sue the company Hollingsworth & Vos. Hollingsworth & Vos operates a manufacturing plant along the Willamette in the Corvallis area. Company heads at the Massachusetts headquarters for H&V should be receiving a certified letter sent from the watchdog group yesterday. The company, known previously as Evenite Fiber Corporation, processes wastewater, has a wastewater operation plant across the river from a glass fiber plant. Travis Williams of the Willamette River Keeper says that there has been more glass fibers and other debris flowing into the river than what the company's DEQ permit allows, especially when it rains. A canoeist in the area says that on February 17th, where he was paddling, the river had as much as 40 square feet of material floating on the river, and that stuff was a foot thick. A unique diamond found in a Brazilian riverbed was enclosed in a layer of ringwoodite. It's a mineral that has never been observed on Earth. The silicate mineral could have been created from the mineral olivine under massive pressure. Scientists say that the fancy diamond originated in the transition zone of the Earth's mantle, 250 to 400 miles below the surface. Researchers also observed water and hydroxide molecules in hydroxide molecule form in the ringwoodite. So-called ultra-deep diamonds have no diamond market value, but they are priceless to geologists. Read more about it in the March 12th edition of the Journal of Nature. Turkish riot police used tear gas and water cannons to disperse mourners at the funeral of a 15-year-old boy. Berkin Elvan died at 15 after being comatose for 269 days after a tear gas canister struck his head. The funeral brought tens of thousands out to mourn. Violent clashes have happened in 30 Turkish cities after Elvan finally passed on Tuesday. The Turkish government anticipated a large turnout and deployed the riot police, angering many of the mourners who were there trying to maintain the peace. That's going to do it for the KBOO News today at 12. Please tune in every weekday at 5 p.m. for the latest in local, national, and international news.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco-brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver, available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Shocks of Sheba has also been made possible with a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Welcome to Shocks of Sheba.
I wanna do, 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 Like my